Hey, everybody, it's Jonathan. Okay, so we've been on kind of a long hiatus here at Partially Derivative, and we apologize. We miss you all, and we, of course, love you very much. Here's the deal. Right before we took our hiatus, we recorded a couple live episodes in San Francisco. One was with the totally awesome folks at Stitch Fix. We had a great time. It was in front of like 40 or 50 people at the Stitch Fix offices. It was fantastic, and we can't wait for you guys to listen to it. And then after that, we recorded another live show at Geekdom, Rackspace's Geekdom offices, and we had a blast there as well. So we really hope you like the show. We apologize we've been away for so long. We've been heads down working as hard as possible to get the latest release out of Poppily, the startup that Chris Biddy and I have been working on, especially over the past few months. So we hope you guys all go check out Poppily. It's super awesome. We're really excited about it. And in the meantime, please enjoy these live shows that we recorded in San Francisco at Stitch Fix. So, of course, huge thanks to both Stitch Fix for having us out to San Francisco. We loved being in the offices and recording with your staff and your fans. It was a really good time, and we'll see you next time we're in the city. Welcome to Partially Derivative, the show about the data of everything. Thanks to Stitch Fix, where we are recording this episode. This is our first ever live recording with an audience. Prove that you're here, audience. Awesome. And this week we are doing the data of you, which is the data of personalization. We're going to tell some super nerdy stories about how we use data and technology for our personal gain and benefit and in our personal lives, or the benefit of our children, sort of. And we're also here, of course, talking with some fantastic guests from Stitch Fix. We have Eric Coulson, who's the Chief Algorithms Officer. Welcome, Eric, to the show! Awesome. We also have Eric's co-conspirator, Eli Bressert, the head of data labs here at Stitch Fix. Welcome, Eli, to the show! All right, fantastic. So you guys were talking about personalization, which I think you are doing a lot of. Do you want to give us a quick kind of snapshot about who you are and the kind of stuff you're doing here to make data, or really to make people's lives more personal? That was my best lead-in. Hold on, I'll drink a little bit more and then...
Amazing transition, smooth.
Smooth like butter.
You
go for it.
Redo that?
You want to redo it? Okay, I'll do it again.
it's going to be no better the second time. Okay.
It, so, tell me why I'm awesome. No, seriously, the data personalization, which you guys are doing here. So tell us.
All right, so this is Stitch Fix. This is women's apparel.
Okay.
It's e-commerce, but so different because the customers are not the ones that pick out the merchandise, right? They want help with this. This is for the busy folks out there, the busy moms that don't have time to go shopping. They don't know what is currently in style or what might look good on their bodies or what's appropriate for their age or for the office, whatever. So they want help with this. They want somebody else to take on this burden, what we call unpaid work, of making you figure all this stuff out.
Okay.
So they come to Stitch Fix. They fill out this style profile to tell us all the things about themselves. And then once we have that data, they say, yeah, okay, I'm ready for stuff. Send me some stuff.
Okay.
Algorithms go to town, and we pick out 5 things for her.
Okay.
And then we will ship them to her sight unseen. The first time she's going to see it when it hits her doorsteps, and that's when she gets to try it on in the privacy of her own home with her own wardrobe and her own mirrors, and with time to think about it, you can try it on twice, whatever. Right? You get feedback from loved one because you're never going to drag your significant other to the mall. Nobody likes to go to the mall. And she's free to keep it all or none of it. She can send it back. We pay the shipping both ways, so it's up to her. And we better be good at this, otherwise we're paying the shipping.
Okay, cool. So basically, but how do you go about like selecting the clothes for somebody else that you don't know? Because that's the whole thing, is that it's a stylist who, they don't meet in person, right?
Right.
You don't, and this isn't a totally qualitative process. Like this is a data science driven fashion.
That's right.
Yeah.
So when I say algorithms, I mean 2 types of compute resources. We've got machines. They are wonderful at all the rote calculations. But we also have humans that do all the things that machines cannot do, such as cognitive abilities and the ability to empathize, the ability to foster a relationship, the ability to use their judgment to figure out which things are aesthetically pleasing and to relate to the customer. Is she really going to like this stuff? Or is she yearning secretly to be pushed out of her comfort zone and they can take these things? So we're using kind of the best of both worlds. You get machine learning, but you also have expert human judgment.
Okay, that makes sense. And so where's the... and then I know Eli, these a lot of the algorithms that get developed, a lot of the ways in which you're trying to figure out how machines can make some of these decisions, that's what you guys are working on. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of, I mean, how do you go about teaching a machine what style is? That seems impossible to me. Yeah, prove me wrong.
So that's actually a really hard problem. So basically...
Checkbox.
Yeah. Sorry.
Turns out
it's a little bit difficult. So there's some really smart people here that who've been working on basically trying to tackle how to identify a style of clothing through attributes that you can see through images. Or you could also do it through natural language processing in the way that clients describe what they're seeing. And so we can learn from that. And then we can take that and distill it into a recommendation engine.
Okay, so the whole idea is like to marry what the computer can figure out based on the images of clothing, mm-hmm. right? And then the descriptions that people are making of the clothing that they see, like, or maybe how's that? Like, how are people describing it? I see that that's a black T-shirt. I understand what that is. Or are they like, is there some context around it? Like, yeah, because we talked about some pretty interesting examples before. Like, what's the difference between like. Or can you give me some examples of how customers are like categorizing the clothing and the way that they describe it?
Sure. So it's actually really interesting. The relationship of the way that we view clothes internally and the way that we describe it is actually very different versus the way that the clients actually experience it.
Okay.
So when a client's onboarding, which Chris was talking about before, Eric was talking about before, where he was saying that, you know, people fill in their information, they share what they do, their body dimensions and so forth. That's the first part to learning about them. And then kind of deciding what clothes they're gonna like. But then there's the other components about how do they describe it. And they're looking at images where they can say, I like these, this set of clothing or not, right? So that's the part that they rate.
Okay.
But then there's the part that we are more curious about, which is how do they describe the clothes themselves?
Okay. Right?
So that's kind of like a structured form that they were talking about before. But now when they give the free form text, they say, I like this black shirt because of this, or, you know, this shirt fit me just right, but it was a bit tight on the shoulders. And that information we wouldn't necessarily get through another way other than freeform. And then we can pick up on that.
And just at a high level, like, you know, computers work with numbers at some level, like things mm-hmm. that can be quantified or represented as a number, like the fit of something or the length of something or the size of something or whatever. But what you're describing seems really, really specific and really qualitative to me.
Yes.
Like, you know, how does that marry with the more kind of number crunching thing that computers are good at?
Oh, yeah. So there's a large body of analysis that people have been doing both in academia and industry where they're essentially looking at information that we would say is unstructured in some way. So text, for example. And you can use or utilize something called natural language processing. And it's all about the art of, or black magic, if you will, about taking the process of, like, you know, seeing text that makes sense to us,
sure.
but it doesn't necessarily make sense to a computer.
Okay.
And then finding some way to quantify it so that it's understandable to the machine.
Okay. And that's the kind of thing that you're able to distinguish between, like, this fits me well and this fits me well, but?
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
So we pick up on those nuances. Other examples would be, like, for example, someone may say, like, I don't like cardigans, right? And so, like, it's something that you would think is extremely easy to filter or pick up on. But people could describe something like, they may actually not know what the term for the item is. And they'll be like, I don't like this item because of this, this, and that. And that's kind of like a description of the item that you're actually talking about. And so you can pick those features up and actually clump them together.
You know, what gets me a lot about Stitch Fix is that, so a lot of you have worked in data science. The standard thing that you see. God damn it, I hate you people.
I'm glad you all remembered. That flew right past me. I was like,
I'm actually wondering which phrase you use exactly. A lot of people work with information. A lot of people work in this field. You have this thing where you go and you take some data and you, like, fill it out. You people are evil. Right, fine. This is going to be so dangerous. Okay. A lot of people who work, what is the other word to use for that? Okay. A lot of times you work with different kinds of information, and then someone hires you to say, hey, I want to do something with that information. And then you run this incredibly complicated analysis on that information. And then you create a report, and you put it on their desk, and they say, I'm not going to read that. But what Stitch Fix does is this is basically an entire company that's betting on an algorithm.
So we've seen recommendation being a core part of other experiences that we have online, especially e-commerce, right? Mm-hmm. Like Amazon, obviously, like users like you also like these other things, and sometimes it's relevant, and sometimes I'm embarrassed that it's relevant or whatever, right? And then and I know, Eric, you were at Netflix, which is obviously a huge, Netflix is always recommending me like movies to watch. And so how is this different?
Well, it's a much bigger commitment, right? So yeah. The personalization that happens here is going to matter. I was explaining to you guys earlier that we have big penalties if we get this wrong, right? We've all had the goofy recommendation on Netflix or on Amazon. You buy something for your niece or nephew, and you're forever plagued with the kid recommendations, right?
Hey, it thinks I'm a survivalist. Like, Amazon recommendation engine thinks I'm, like, living out.
What are you getting?
You're like Bear Grylls.
Bear Grylls. I got a kitchen knife or something like that. It's, like, now recommending all these, like, crossbows. I mean, I'm fine with that.
Wow. But you also like living in the middle of Arizona.
I know. See, it's totally fine. My wife, I have a 9-month-old or an 8-month-old, and I feel like crossbows are probably not the thing that you wants to be delivered to my house right now, but I mean crossbows, people.
You only search Amazon when other people are looking over your shoulder. Right. You're like, well, you know, I get a lot of crossbow recommendations.
It's my life. So dangerous. There I am.
Yeah, you're in the wild.
You're going to have to work hard to convince Amazon that you're not. You're going to have to overcompensate, whatever the opposite of
crossbow
is.
I need to just click on a bunch of smart books. It's like it's exactly like the NPR thing. Like, everyone says they watch way more NPR than they really do. I just need to click all smart books for an hour. And be like, hey guys, that's what I do all day.
So if you send a crossbow to a woman in a Stitch Fix box, it would be a problem?
No, she's not going to laugh about this. This is not the shoulder shrug that you get with those goofy recommendations on Amazon. She's going to be upset, right? She may be depending on this thing for some event, or you know, these things, they only come once in a while whenever she requests them, or they can go on this monthly subscription, so they're not coming every day. And they anticipate them. They really look forward to this. If this thing doesn't hit home, they're very upset. So that's the non-monetary penalty right there, is the upset customer. But we also got, we just paid shipping both ways on that stuff, and we had the cost of that inventory being out. It's a big deal to us. We have to be really, really good at this stuff. And the other big thing is we don't have the other barriers to competition, right? We don't have economies of scale or pricing differentiation or even speedy shipping, right? Those aren't the things that we're going to bet on. It's algorithms. We got to do this better than anyone in the world. This is how we're going to differentiate. We do expect competition someday. And when they do, they'll maybe try it, and hopefully it's not going to be as relevant. And they come back here and say, that Stitch Fix always gets me the right stuff. They don't send me crossbows.
Well, yeah. I mean, that'd be okay. So
I think if do we get some equity in the company if it turns out that it's Stitch Fix, definitely never a crossbow in your box?
Yeah.
If that's the new tagline, can you commit to that right here? On
share that with our marketing team. So we'll get back to you on that.
Okay, yeah. Where's the lawyer? Because I will try to game it out that you send my wife a crossbow. It is it's shawl, nice camisole, crossbow,
You can accessorize it, I suppose.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about about how it is that you go about quantifying the quantifying style or quantifying fashion in terms of like image recognition? I think we all kind of have this idea that, Google's pretty good most of, kind of large-scale image recognition and neural nets can figure out the difference between a person and a refrigerator, unless you have a really unfortunate face. But sorry, I'm just imagining that. All right. So outside of refrigerator face, how do you guys go about distinguishing really small things, what does it mean to have a I don't know. What are even the relevant aspects of an image of a shirt that would help your system make a recommendation to the stylist that ultimately make the recommendations to the human? Is that something
Yeah. I see what you're saying. So,
that's a poorly framed question, and you clearly don't understand this process.
Let me reiterate on the question then. So it's how do we employ, features from, computer vision that we can say that there's some abstraction of style that we can feed to the recommendation engine.
That's perfect. That's okay. A better way to express it. Well done.
It's almost like you do this professionally.
So, basically, I'll admit that we're actually still in the very early stages of this process. So we just started ramping up the means of, let's say, like natural language processing has been something that's really only been around for us for, say, maybe about 8 to 9 months. And we really ramped that up quite a lot, thanks to one of the people on my team, Chris Moody. And then computer vision's really kind of jumped, and it's not only something that's within the realm of data labs, but it's also within the realm of a few other teams. And they all have a common interest of trying to understand or the properties of the images that can like give us the features of the clothes.
Okay.
So that said, many different people are trying to tackle this problem from different angles. And there's different ways that you can approach it. One, which Chris Moody actually was trying to solve through language. So he actually wasn't trying to actually look at the imagery in terms, you know, to solve the problem of saying, you know, what kind of properties do you have for clothes from the images. He actually said, you know what, we can actually find out what the clients are saying about the properties of those clothes, and then we can actually start to understand those clothes from the features of the language.
Okay. Right?
And that actually turns out to work out really well. But now we're starting to take other approaches where can we do, let's say, for example, image segmentation. So basically trying to distinguish the differences of someone with clothing with the background and then trying to understand like what kind of clothes are on them. Is it a skirt? Is it a shirt?
Okay.
So these are like other features. And then there's another one that was recently done. And it's actually in a blog post from TJ Torres. He's on Data Labs as well. And he's been trying to basically let neural networks learn in an unsupervised way. So a good analogy for this is like how a child picks up a language. So, you know, they pick up language just by analyzing, seeing action. And they do it in kind of an unsupervised manner of picking up language. And in that same way, we're trying to abstract features from the images of the clothing. And so this is the very beginning of what we're doing. We haven't actually, we haven't actually done a lot with it yet. It's still very early stages. And that's exactly what Data Labs focus on. So we do like the experimental research, and we're looking for things that have kind of like a high impact if it works.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. Are there any other like, are there any other like top secret, not at all public, Data Labs projects that you are willing to share? And I promise I won't tell anybody else.
Don't answer that question.
I'll try my best. So actually, there is one more. We haven't really talked about it publicly yet, but it is a fun project. Which is, can we find a better way of understanding the properties of clothes in terms of a relationship of size and fit of clothing to, let's say, our clients? And this is kind of like a holy grail that I think a lot of different institutes or companies around the world are trying to understand. It's a very complicated problem. And one way that we've been thinking about it is like 3D scanning.
Whoa. Cool. So the 3D scanning clothes?
Yeah.
For those of us who don't know very much about 3D scanning, how does it work?
I can't tell you all the details on this one.
Okay. Are you inventing 3D scanning? Is this
no,
like
we're not inventing 3D scanning? Actually, doing 3D scanning takes a lot of different angles. You can approach it from many different ways. So, for example, there are companies that will provide you a way of taking pictures at different angles of the same object and reconstruct a three-dimensional model of whatever it is. It could be a statue, it could be a person with clothes, it could be an animal, whatever. And then there's other ways of doing it where you actually like point lasers you point lasers at the object.
The model's like, oh god.
Yeah, you know the one from Predator, like with the triangular laser?
It's just like sitting there like three dots, like, oh god.
Yeah, exactly, there you go. So basically but it's not like that. So,
no models were killed at Stitch Fix.
Yeah. But it's just the idea. It's just like, you know, so that's another type of scanning where you use lasers. And this is actually something that's kind of, say, been a bit of a renaissance because there's also the 3D printing. We're not doing 3D printing. But in terms of the 3D scanning, basically people want to scan objects and be able to print them out on the fly. And so there's a lot of 3D scanners that are, like, extremely cheap for, like, you know, experimental purposes. And that's one of them, where you can use lasers to actually, like, scan the object.
So for weeks, this thing sit on his desk, slowly scanning, of all things, a beer can. Eli's practice domain was beer can, and then he would put a cozy on it and then scan it again and tinker with the taking the deltas between the two. Right? But that's about as far as he got when he came to, hey, I think I'm on to something here.
Yeah.
We got to get into this 3D scanning. It really helps us with fit. So that's the type of project that Data Labs team takes on, is the highly uncertain.
Like, yes.
See, I feel like you're using like Data Labs as like your personal like.
Come on.
I feel like you're looking at your job.
No,
as
so
as a way of like buying cool stuff. Like sometime, I'm telling you, the next week he's gonna be like, guys, I need a drone because something clothing. Just like run with it.
Maybe. Can I have a drone?
Yeah, I already had that proposal from you last week.
I know, but just to kind of reiterate that the way that we actually do work, and we're very, I'd say, practical research team. Everything that we focus on really would, if they work, really do make an impact on the company.
I think drones would totally do that. I see no problem with that.
I'll see what I can do.
I love that, like, so there's some, a lot of people here from Stitch Fix. If you're not, if you walk through the building, it's like very fashion-y around here.
Yeah.
Like, people are well-dressed, there's like rows of clothing, and like people are cool, and...
Well, they only do women's clothing, so like if you're a woman, you're like excellently clothed, and if you're a man, it's kind of like, ah, crap.
Yeah, no offense, Eli and Eric, who are sitting right here next to us. No, but then, of course, the last thing I expected was like, but you know what we really do? Like, cool shit with lasers and drones. Like,
somewhere deep below, there's a shark with a laser on its head. Like, one of these times, I'm going to figure out
actually,
a way to use this.
Honestly, I dreamed about one.
Oh, my God.
No, I really like, did dream about it.
Yeah. Like, okay, what I'll do is I'll put a laser on top of a shark, and then clothing will happen.
No, I was being chased.
What?
Yeah, I was being chased. It was like a James Bond dream.
Well, are you James Bond? Or
no,
you?
I was not James Bond. I was just in a character in the dream, and I was being chased by sharks with lasers.
So you're like the person that dies before James Bond gets there? Like, you're like the prop dead person on the
floor? No, I survived somehow. So I don't remember how, but it was a long time ago.
It was an excellent skill that got you through.
Yeah. I love that, like, next round of Stitch Fix development is going to be like, so we'll hatch a velociraptor from mosquito DNA.
And then we'll find an island in the South Pacific.
Totally. And we'll put a bunch of models in it in high heels.
Nothing will go wrong.
Totally. I'll spare no expense. Has anybody seen Jurassic Park? Like, come on, you guys. That was really funny right there at the end. I got in one of the lines from the movie. All right, so... So thank you guys again for letting us know all about the work that you're doing. And we are, of course, we're talking loosely about personal things. This is also about personalization. But we should tell some stories. Does anybody have a story? If nobody, all right, we'll give you a little bit more time. No pressure. But if you think of one, Chris's story is going to be awful. So you'll definitely be funnier and more interesting than him.
My story is the most personal story you could possibly have. It's someone's name. So I have cursed someone with something that I figured out using data science. That is like...
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. It turns out Chris's daughter's name is data science.
I will never talk to her again. All right. So I have an 8-month-old. And both my name and my wife's name, which is Jennifer, is super common. My name's Chris, her name's Jennifer. It's like a curse in existence that like there's like always like 50 Chris's in your class and 50 Jennifer's in your class. And it's like the worst. Or not the worst. I mean, there's probably worse things than that. But like, it's pretty bad.
Your marriage is like a normal distribution.
So I have thought a lot about a name that I would possibly give someone. Like, what would be the perfect name? And I figured out with my wife's help a few criteria that we were going for. One, it should be easy to say, and then two, it should not be very popular, so it's like relatively unique, not like totally unique. Three, it should not, I guess we'll do four. Three, it should not be like a strange misspelling of another name, like Chris with like some kind of like K and a Y in there and like a Z at the end or something like that. Like it should be something.
A silent X.
Four, which is the hard one, it should be like culturally kind of like a little bit ambiguous, like so it isn't like, I don't know, some kind of like super Irish name or some kind of thing. So I was going for like...
Pretentious. The last
that's exactly
character
right.
is
pretentious. Yeah,
pretentious.
Yeah, that's exactly, let me do that right. So I had a theory of how I was going to do this. So this is my approach. I did not tell my wife I was doing this at the time. I took all the names in the Social Security database back to the origins of when they started doing it, and they go back to like 1860 or something. It goes back forever. And I took all these names, and it has sort of it has the occurrences of that name by year. So then I ranked those by the latest year, which was 2013. So I have all the names ever in the United States ranked by their popularity of the latest year. And then I took that and I ended up creating a sheet which printed them all out according to first their popularity in 2013 and then alphabetical. And then we took those names and we sat around with a bunch of friends and we kind of whittled the names down to the ones that we really cared about. So we kind of like eliminated a lot of names. Apparently Gertrude is a name that's coming back, which is weird, but like, okay. It's super popular on the naming ranking. I hope no one here is named Gertrude because that would be really awkward. But like, that's a really popular name.
Or just named your baby Gertrude.
Yeah. And so then we took this name, so we whittled it down to like, I think we whittled it down to like 20 names, right? So we took like 100,000 names, we whittled it down to 20 names. And then I was like, okay, I need to figure out this cultural aspect, which is complicated. So what I ended up doing is I ended up figuring out the number of times that name was mentioned in various instances of Google. So like the Netherlands Google versus the English Google versus like the Chinese Google. And then the number of times it was mentioned in various Wikipedia like sets. So like, you know, like the Wikipedia in like French, the Wikipedia in whatever, whatever. And then I created this like basically a presentation to my wife, which was like a limited set. And then we talked about it for a while and then we selected a name.
There you go.
So my daughter's name is Zaria, in case you're wondering, which is amazing because it's both a city in Nigeria. It's a cultural, like I think it's a cultural folklore in like Eastern Europe, and it means flower in Arabic or something like that, or there's something I remember. But like that was one of the winning ones, and that's how I chose my name, was highly data driven. But I will say. Yeah, I will say there was like, you know, that actually strangely relates to Stitch Fix, that this name was not something, I didn't run this algorithm and then it's like, Jen, the name is Zaria, sorry. There was a discussion because I think there's a computer-human interaction where like the computer gives you a certain number of choices, like it whittled it down to 150,000 to like six. And then we kind of sat around and decided which ones that we actually wanted to do because perhaps, you know, like I didn't want whatever the other name was, which I forgot what it was. But like that kind of mix of like using computer science, using computer science to sort of like take a really like difficult problem and narrow it down to a few related choices, and then having a conversation and adding that human element to say, hey, you know what, that last mile I will possibly make by myself and not torture my child with some name that my Python script created.
Like, the next one is like a Markov chain when you're just like combining characters and you're like, well, you know, ultimately.
It's like that's what we do for the middle name. So it's like Zaria, like Nigeria is a great city burrito, banana, Alvin.
I'm not even sure like how that string, like you were like a Markov chain yourself. What lets you, like 4 beers in, you're just like, burrito, Nigeria, burrito. Does anybody else have a data story that they want to tell? I won't push you into it if you don't want to.
Yeah, Eli.
What are you trying to imply? Sure, it's actually pretty embarrassing.
I like perfect. This is the best kind,
yeah.
Clearly we're doing this right.
So about 2 years ago, I left Sydney, Australia, and came here for being at the center of the tech world. And I had one problem, which was that I had a car, and I didn't sell it before I left. So I had to get rid of it, but I didn't want to have like a big loss on it. So what I did was like, I'm gonna be smart about it. I'm gonna do some data science on the car and like see the best way that I can like suck all the data down from like multiple car websites and get the features that are important for my car and try and sell it, you know, and put it at the best price, the predicted price that I would sell. But there's two problems. One was that it doesn't, out of all the data I can get my hands on, I could not figure out how quickly the car sold, right? So every time that I had the car, I had to pay for maintenance, parking permit, you know, insurance, et cetera, and I wanted to get rid of it as fast as possible. So I couldn't really figure out like at what price I could put it at an optimal point to set, you know, to sell it like literally within a month or 2 months. But I just saw this value of like, I think it was like maybe about $20,000, and I was like, okay, I'll pick that. And so I put it on. No one bit whatsoever.
It's proof that you're like, yeah. Your system was broken.
Yeah, my system was broken. So I went into it and I revised it again, and then that's when I realized about this problem, that I didn't really have this, you know, this window of how long it takes to sell a car. So I kept thinking about it, and I'm like, what can I do different? And then I started to realize about 5 months in, that the problem was I wasn't in Australia, right? So like when people are going to see the car, and I was getting this feedback from my friend, every time they said, so why is the guy like not here to sell the car? And like, you're this like shifty dude from Australia, like selling the car for someone else, right? And so like this level of trust was very low between my friend and the buyer, or the potential buyer.
Yeah, yeah.
And so 6 months in, I just realized that I just had to eat it. And I just...
You'd like screw the algorithm.
Yeah,
so $1,000.
Yeah, I dropped it significantly. And then it worked.
But no, I think this is like a perfect example of like you developed a great algorithm
mm-hmm.
that didn't work because there's this like human component that was like, oh wait, your friend is like super shady looking.
Well, he's not shady. But it was just like, you know,
it's like an eye patch, like a cigarette, and he's like, ah, there's a car.
No, he's actually really proper, but like it just, I think maybe that made it even weirder that there was like a proper guy like selling a car for someone who's in America, and I would only communicate with him by email. And it was like, I think it just didn't really make things trustworthy.
All right. So the last thing, we're just about out of time. I know you guys are gonna go. We have one more data story that I'll tell really quick. It's actually not a data story. We'll say that it's a data engineering story because it's cool to be a data engineer and or a data scientist now. But really, this is a geeky developer story, programmer story. Okay. So last thing. Okay. So like Chris, I had a problem. Chris was having a baby. And I really wanted a motorcycle. So I don't know. It's about the same thing. It's like it's a very similar urge. that sounded gross. I'm so sorry. All right. So when I don't know if it's the same here in California, but in Texas, I live in Austin. I don't really live in Texas. I live in Austin. Regardless, the laws of
the greatest
city in these in the Texas nation. All right, whatever. So what you have to do when you want to ride any two-wheeled vehicle that has a motor in the state of Texas is that you have to get certified to drive a motorcycle. That's the thing for everybody. And so we didn't buy a motorcycle because I have a wife. And that makes it challenging to buy a motorcycle.
Someone would like to live just like
she would prefer that I didn't die, which is a valid reason. It's a valid reason. So we got a scooter as a compromise.
That's tough, man. That's tough.
But we're like, oh, it's cool. Yeah. We're like metro and urban. It'll be like living in Venice, you know, but not, you know. Totally. And it wasn't even a big scooter. Like, there are some that you can drive on the highway. This was not. This was like 150 cc's, which if you know the size of motorcycle engines, you realize that this can barely support my weight. And so, like, and they're small. And you can't tell because I'm sitting down. I'm 6'4", so it looks ridiculous. Like, it looks like I'm on a children's tricycle.
There's a giraffe riding down the street.
Yeah, totally. and the best, so, like, we had it when we got married. And so, like, there was one, I forget why, like, my dad and my about-to-be father-in-law were in the car behind me. And I'd, like, met them at the hotel where he was staying on the scooter. And I was leaving. And, like, also at the hotel was, like, some, like, biker rally or something, like, biker convention.
Yeah.
And so he's, like...
You fit right in.
I fit right in. And so, like, there's me, and, like, up next to me are, like, this, like, dude with, like, hair and a beard, and, like, his wife with hair and a beard, like, on these, like, massive hogs, you know? And then there's me, like, me. And, like, that's the photo that he took, like, the day before, like, me, like, overflowing off of this tiny tricycle next to these tough bikers. So I needed a motorcycle because this was, like, the most embarrassing period of my life. And when you take the test, sorry, that's what I was going to talk about. When you take the test, you can take it on a scooter, but really, like, you show up and they have like a dozen motorcycles, and then they have like a scooter on the end. And the dude who's like teaching the class is like, oh yeah, you know, go, you know, pick up one of the bikes or whatever. Like, or you could ride on the scooter.
And of course, you're like, beep,
beep. Yeah, and I was not going to be the guy that was like, oh good, I'll go on the scooter. Like, that'll be awesome. So I learned to ride a motorcycle, and I was going to get one. But as I mentioned, I'm married, and it makes it really difficult to say, so would you notice if like $5,000 to $10,000 just wasn't there in the bank account?
and
a motorcycle showed up in our garage? And the answer, of course, is yes. And so I figured, like, I might have a better chance of acquiring the motorcycle if I didn't have to pay for it.
Oh,
And so I used data science to break into Harley Davidson. It's not true.
Is it a crowbar? Yeah, it's a GitHub repo. It's totally not a real crowbar.
That would be awesome. That would be a better end. So I'm like the James Bond of motorcycle theft. If James Bond was a data scientist. So that didn't happen. But what I did was that I went on Craigslist. And so occasionally, some really big shit goes for free on Craigslist, including motorcycles. But it's very, the competition is high. So if you've ever tried to get something for free off of Craigslist, like anything that people put on there that does not cost money is gone in 30 seconds. Like people sit there and they refresh. And like, it's like they're giving away like spoons, like wooden spoons for your kitchen, slightly used, like dry egg still on from scraping off the pan. And somebody's like, oh, sold, gone. Like, you know, collected within seconds because not everybody has the job. Nevertheless, this is how I was going to get my motorcycle. And so I started scraping the Craigslist free section in Austin, obviously. I was indexing all of the pages so that I could search them. Then I had another process, like a little script that would run periodically, and like ping my database and search for, you know, motorcycles from the free section. But this is where it got important. So once I actually found a motorcycle entry, then I would send myself a text message and say like, bzz, like, you know, there's a motorcycle on Craigslist, you need to do it right now. And then I would send a message either to the phone number that was in the ad or the email address if I had to and say, I want it, I'll be there in 5 minutes. Which was often like, didn't work out. Like there were a lot of false positives because there's all sorts of.
I like
of
it how someone was like selling a trampoline that was motorcycle themed. You're like, be there in 5 minutes.
Exactly. That's what happened all the time. They were like motorcycle helmet free, and I'd be like, I'll be there in 5 minutes, and they'd go, okay, great, and I'd go, oh shit, like.
I guess I have a motorcycle helmet.
Yeah, sorry. Or like I wouldn't show up.
Like, so 36 like, motorcycle helmets.
Yeah, totally. This is like a rainbow attack on like the free motorcycle givers of Craigslist, where I was basically just like spamming everybody. But finally, I did find a motorcycle, and so I did. Blah blah blah. I'll be there 5 minutes, and he was like, okay, great, and it was actually a motorcycle, and he said that it worked, and I got there, and it did not work, because who would give away a free motorcycle that worked on Craigslist? And so that's the end of the data part of the story. There's no other, like, science or engineering or whatever. The last part of it is that I rented a U-Haul on short notice. I got the motorcycle back to my house. Me and a friend, who I owe for the rest of my life, because he spent 2 days with me, like, if you know how motorcycles work, I don't. We rebuilt the carburetor. That might be meaningful to it's meaningful to you. Awesome. Somebody knows what a carburetor is. We did that. It took a long time and it was nasty. And so we did that. I rode it all the way to my house. I drove it around the city one time and then it never started again. So now I have a free motorcycle that my wife is super pissed about because I wasn't supposed to have a motorcycle, yet I had one, and it didn't run, and it sat in the garage. And so I traded it with a friend of mine who was doing something for us, I can't remember. And I was like, cool, you'll get a free motorcycle. It's totally awesome. It worked.
I like how you paused before like the past tense. It worked.
And I don't know why I'm still telling this story. We've like lost all relevance. The point was is that he did know how motorcycles work. He rebuilt it properly and told me that it was lucky that I wasn't dead. He's like, no wonder it was free. The brakes didn't work. The engine was falling apart. Like, but whatever. If I was brave enough to have driven the motorcycle and not the scooter over 35 miles an hour, I wouldn't be here doing this podcast. I would be dead. Thanks to data science. And, and on that uplifting conclusion, thank you. Thanks everybody for coming. This was a lot of fun. This is our first live show. Give yourselves a big round of applause for your first audience. Yay! Cool. Thanks again to Stitch Fix for having us. This was a blast. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Eli.
Your pleasure.
Eric. And thank you all for coming. And no thanks to Chris.
Hey, you're all bastards for choosing data.
All right. Thanks, you guys. Thank you.